Chapter 18. Buttoned tight, tall, rapier lean and hawk-eyed, Kruxer stood before the squad to give orders. He said,
"I'm going to explain this to you in terms you can understand. Shut up!"
The mighty were gathered on the deck, greeting Ben-Hadad with his flip-down spectacles and goofy Farkoudi, who just successfully tested Ben's newest skimmer. They hadn't all taken the news that Tisis would be joining them well, so now they paused, thinking Kruxer wanted them to shut up so that he could explain it. But he said no more.
"Oh, come on," Winston said.
"No," Kruxer said. "You have your orders. You don't like them? Fine. Don't like them. And shut it. Since when did soldiers like the orders they got?"
"We're not exactly just soldiers," Big Leo pointed out.
When he folded his arms like that, his biceps bulged out like sides of beef. Kruxer said,
"We are in this way. We get a task, we have to carry it out. Having to like it is nowhere in the description."
"I'm not asking for blind obedience," Kip said.
"He shouldn't have to," Kruxer said. "We've pledged our lives and honour to him. Stop acting like children and start acting like warriors. There have been lots of women in the Black Guard."
"Every last woman in the Black Guard is a special case, and you know it," Big Leo said, his voice low and large.
"Every last person in the Black Guard is a special case," Kruxer said.
"None of that matters," Winston said. "We make our own rules. We aren't Blackguards."
It hurt all of them to be reminded. Only Farkoudi seemed unmoved. He said,
"Well, I don't want to make rules that get us killed."
"I think us getting killed was pretty much assured as soon as we decided to go with Breaker," Ben-Hadad said.
"No offense, Breaker." "None taken," Kip said, "because it's wonderful that my closest friends assume I'm going to get them killed." Somehow none of them noticed Tisis approach, with her blonde hair tucked up under a floppy petasos, scruffy trousers and tunic and a belt full of weapons slung low and loose on her hips, she nearly fit in with the ship's crew.
"You should take me," she said. "There's only 6 of you. I'll be lucky number 7.
"I'm not superstitious," Big Leo grumbled.
"I am," Farkoudi said. "Ever since this one time, I talked to this old witch lady, and she said, 'Son.'"
"Farkoudi!"
Kruxer said.
"No, she said, 'Son.' She didn't know my name. It was already creepy enough that—"
"Fek!"
Kruxer said.
"Oh. Oh, right."
Tisis said, "There are things I can do that none of you big, terrifyingly strong men can do."
"Like what?" Big Leo asked.
Farkoudi looked pleased to be called a big, terrifyingly strong man. He flexed his pectorals in a little dance.
"She gets my vote." "Shut up, Ferk. Like what?" Big Leo asked.
"I can talk to strangers without scaring the hell out of them."
"Funny," Big Leo said, "but we're trying to have a serious—"
"I was serious," Tisis said. "I know you all look at Farkoudi and think of him as a big goof. Stop that, Farkoudi. Look at him, right now."
They turned and looked at the big goof.
"Farkoudi," she said, exasperated. "Finger out of your nose."
He withdrew his finger and lowered.
"There, like that."
"Oh, saggies," Winston said.
"I get it."
"Get what?"
Kruxer asked, clearly irritated that he wasn't understanding.
"Look at all of you," Tisis said. "You've known each other for years now. Some of you since you were barely walking. Look what happened to you while you weren't paying attention. You're not 6 boys traipsing through a foreign satrapy looking for adventure. What do you look like?"
Kip knew what she was talking about, but he was captured by another thought. These young warriors had been cutting her off, telling her how she couldn't come with them, disrespecting her because of her beauty. Now they were listening to her quietly. She'd turned them already, and they hadn't noticed it yet. Except maybe Winston. He seemed unaffected by her charm, grimly amused by the whole thing.
"You look fucking scary," Kip murmured.
It was true, and Kip saw it crash down on Kruxer most of all for some reason, perhaps because he was the commander. Somehow he'd seen himself as a junior officer, a leader whose command would surely be taken from him, who would be shuffled back under the leadership of someone older, a leader of boys. He'd always known he would have to start at the bottom when he went out into the real world. But now here he was, He'd been proud that the Mighty were the best squad among the Blackguard trainees, but he hadn't realized that now they were among the best in the world. They would be feared, because they were fearsome. Big, grinning, chummy Ferkudi might have a permanent layer of softness around his big, round frame, but he could tear off a man's arm with a power in those big, round shoulders. Add Man Mountain Big Leo, quietly menacing Winson, graceful Cruxer with his calcified shins, sinewy and double-spectacled Ben Haydad, and Kip, and not many people would block their way in a dark alley.
"I meant you too, Kip," Tysis said.
He snorted, and they looked at him as if he were crazy.
"What?"
he asked.
"They're calling you the Splitter of Storms," Tysis said.
"Stormbreaker, now, actually," Ben Haydad said. "My suggestion."
"Oh, hey, that's clever," Ferkudi said.
Ben Haydad said, "Sometimes praise from you doesn't have the intended effect." But Kip wasn't listening. It was always a game, right? These names were propping up of a facade. If you're not a real hero like an Iron Fist, but you have to accomplish what he would, you have to borrow as many of the trappings as possible. Ergo, Breaker. Stormbreaker fit the mold, but that had been a fluke. Irreproducible. Luck. If he even tried to draft Parol or Key again right now, he'd only hurt himself. But Tysis was still staring at him as if he were a half-wit for doubting himself. Tysis was looking at him like that? Tysis, who'd seen his embarrassing nudity, who'd seen the shameful scars of a man who hadn't been able to fend off small rodents?
"A couple of the sailors tried to worship you," Cruxer had said.
It was as if all the faces around him were trying to tell him he was a different man than he knew he was. Some men like the feel of wool over their eyes, I suppose. That was a fine dismissal for the sailors. But his wife? His friends, who knew him far better than she did? They had a blind spot for him, born of their love and forgiveness. Their kindly view of him was more a reflection of their characters than his.
"Right," he said easily. "It's beside the point. All of us, going into Blood Forest, all armed, all with the stained eyes of drafters, all with the dark skin of foreigners, we look like invaders or brigands."
Cruxer sighed, and Kip could feel frustration emanating from him. Cruxer was the best of them and the blindest. Kip loved him for it.
"She'll slow us down," Big Leo protested, but he'd already lost.
"Any more than I will?" Ben Haydad asked, gesturing to his knee. "Or do you want to leave me behind, too?"
"That's not what I meant," Big Leo said.
But Kip was diverted by another problem now. Verity was walking across the deck, laden with baggage, taking up a place at the periphery of the conversation, head downcast, just a slave, invisible. Thanks.
"Uh-uh,"
Kip said. He grabbed his own bag from her and checked it briefly. Soap, spare clothes, sundries, a pot, a plate, deck box, and coin sticks, with the correct number of coins on them.
"You're not coming."
"I'll be most useful, my lord. Cooking, cleaning, mending. Things you've gotten used to having a slave around for. I can ease your life on the trail in 100 ways."
"I have no doubt of it," Kip said.
He looked dubiously at the other bags she was carrying. How many of those were for her and how many for Tysis?
Breaker.
"Someone to cook for us?" Ferkudi said. "Have you ever tried to eat Crux's squirrel stew?"
"I never was good at laundry," Winston said. "Is this about my former insouciance, my lord?" Verity asked. "Because I can promise..."
Kip held up a hand.
"It's not about that. Tysis is coming with us. Her sister is going to be furious, and I need someone whom Irene Milagos trusts without reservation to tell her that this really was Tysis's choice, and at her insistence. I need someone to tell her the truth, the whole truth."
"Lady Milagos will be furious with me, my lord.
And for that, I'm sorry. I assume you've tried to steer Tysis otherwise."
She scowled. It was a yes.
"So have I."
She took a deep breath, then bowed her head, accepting. When Kip turned back, Winston and Ferkudi were looking at him. Ferkudi looked glum, like a child denied a cake. Winston, though, looked peeved. Kip realized that when he'd held up his hand for Verity to stop speaking, they'd taken it as an order for them, too.
"Have to admit, I liked it better when you were just one of us," Winston said. "If I may be excused, my lord?"
He sketched a mock bow. "No, actually," Kip said. Before we go, we have to sort one more thing out. Not just for us, but for Irene Milagos.
What's that? Winston asked, lemon-faced.
He and the others glanced over at Verity, who was suddenly trying to look very non-threatening.
Just what the hell we plan to accomplish, Kip said.
I say we go fuck up the colour prints, Big Leo said.
I don't think we're in the audience participation portion of the show, Ben Haydad said.
What?
Big Leo asked.
Shut it, both of you, Cruxa said.
Kip took a deep breath. The strength of the Seven Satrapies has always been its trade. As much as our religion and politics bind us, we've partly been strong because of the trade winds and the trade circuit and the intermingling of blood and culture and goods that's allowed us. Elito produces the best firearms, even though they're as far as possible from the best sources of gunpowder, in Rue. Parian iron is shipped everywhere. Rathgari crops feed all the satrapies. That's meant even a farmer in Arbornia can afford to buy fresh Tyrian oranges on occasion. But there are downsides to this too. No one in other satrapies tries to mine silver on the scale they do at Lorien in Attash. Everyone knows the best and most salt comes from the Rathgar coast. The shipyards of the Great River Delta are fed almost exclusively with Blood Forest's lumber. Point is, and I know I'm losing you, but give me a few more moments. Point is, the Chromeria has been pretending this war isn't serious from the beginning. At every step it's been worse than they realise, and much worse than they let on. The specialisation that has been so helpful is going to be devastating as we lose the only places that make certain necessities for us making war. It wasn't that much of an economic blow when the other satrapies lost Tyrian oranges and Tyrian hardwoods, but now we've lost the guano mines of Rue for gunpowder and all the silver of Lorien, silver the Colour Prince's blood robes can use to hire mercenaries and pirates. At the Battle of Ruick Head, we lost our navy. It's being rebuilt, but that takes time and treasure, neither of which we have in excess. But if the pagans take Blood Forest, they take away cheap, plentiful lumber that's close to our shipyards. That sets off a death spiral for us. If we can't get lumber, we can't build ships. If we can't build ships, we can't defend the shipyards. If they take the shipyards, they take the Cerulean Sea. If they take the Cerulean Sea, they won't need to win a single battle against us. Big Jasper and Little Jasper are islands, and they're nowhere near self-sustaining. A simple naval blockade would mean everyone there starves.
Our skimmers can sink any ship they throw against us, Cruxa protested.
True, absolutely, Kip said. But skimmers can't haul in food, or gunpowder, or salt, or lumber, or iron, or all the tens of thousands of things Big Jasper needs every single day. And the fact is, the secret of the skimmers won't be a secret forever. How long will that be our advantage? A year? It'll take the blood robes a year or more to build the navy they need. What will the Chromeria do if they show up with a vast navy and skimmers?
They'll die, Winston said.
Make this simple for us, Breaker, Ben Haydad said.
What do we need to do?
I'm certain, and Lady Irene Milagos needs to know this, he said, looking over at Verity, that if we lose Blood Forest, we lose the war. There was one battle already at Oxford, and our side lost, grievously. Rathgar lost 35,000 men there. That, followed by Raven Rock and the worthless victory at Two Mills Junction. Rathgar's sick of taking the brunt of every battle, sick of sending men to die. I think everyone on our side has written off the foresters. They're too far away and too expensive and too hard to defend. A better line, they think, is the Great River. I think the satrapers and the colours will never say this out loud, but they'll send token forces to make a guerrilla war in the forest to buy themselves time to build their own defences. But no one's going to send tens of thousands of soldiers to die again. In short, the Seven Satrapies have already fallen. They simply don't have the will to do what needs to be done to win.
A silence fell over them. Worst fight speech ever, Winston said.
But, Kip said, grinning suddenly, we have a few advantages. Inside Tyria and Attash, there were people who wanted the Colour Prince to win. He threw off odious bonds and tore up bad treaties. He freed slaves. He promised wealth and a return to ancestral gods. A certain slice of the people loved him. That's not true in Blood Forest. The people here care deeply about nature, and they see whites as profoundly unnatural, defying the order of the seasons themselves by which life yields to death. Moreover, the Colour Prince lost his temper here. He wiped out whole towns and let his men ravage and rape others. This is the satrapy just across from the border town where 200 young women jumped to their deaths off the walls of Raven Rock with their children in their arms.
The people here are scattered, but they're tough, and they know the land intimately. They're hunters and trappers and guides and lumbermen and river captains. In some areas, they've never much recognized the Cromeria, but they will recognize someone who comes in and fights a hated invader with them. We gather everyone who's willing and has something to offer, and we show the colour prints why it's called the Blood Forest. Tysis grew up there. She knows the people and their customs. With her help, we're going to go to the Deep Forest. We're going to raise a small army, and we're going to save the satrapy.
In other words, Big Leo said, we're going to go fuck up the colour prints. Like I said.
Kip punched the big man in his good shoulder. It was like hitting a side of beef.
Exactly. I just had to use more words to explain it for the slow ones.
Don't you guys look at me, Fetkudi said.
And so, nearly in sight of the capital of Hrothgar, they boarded the odd new skimmer that Ben-Hadad had dubbed the Mighty Thruster. Kip had shaken his head. Tysis had muttered, boys. Farkudi had guffawed. Winston had grinned. Kruxa had blushed and said,
you can't call it that.
We're the mighty, Ben-Hadad said. The propulsion units are thrusters. That's all.
The damn liar.
I guess you'll be the first man to ride the Mighty Thruster?
Tysis asked. His brow wrinkled.
That makes it sound. Make sure you take a good wide stance, legs far apart, or he'll throw you. He? I didn't. Do you need more instruction? Because I'm getting quite adept at riding a Mighty Thruster myself, she said.
Ben-Hadad blanched.
You'll want to make sure you have a good grip, and loosen up your hips.
All right, all right.
Hours later, they sped into the mouth of the great river. On the good skimmer, Blue Falcons.